think that's true. There is a state of consciousness where the life force is withdrawn because it's completed, and it will take on, you can call it a suicide, but it is a withdrawal of the life force because there is a completion, and it's known to be completed, rather than waiting for any other force to come along and excuse oneself from this plane, the life force is volitionally withdrawn. Now, we can call this a suicide, or we can call this a realization, merely an awareness, coming into conscious awareness of life and death processes, that one withdraws and activates, just as somebody learning to materialize the body and dematerialize the body may incarnate and disincarnate volitionally. The death is no longer of any consequence. One isn't caught in good or bad, positive or negative, as far as the moral aspects here. I really feel that there has to be more discernment in not picking up what was in the 1800s on into the 1900s, early 1900s, a guilt pattern about death, and that we must spend more time to discern very clearly the levels of suicide and not lump it all together into one single aspect. Otherwise, what happens is that you end up propagating a moralistic value system that may not really be pertinent to the scope to which you're addressing yourself. I sense that there are some suicides that simply accept the aspect of release, knowing perfectly well what they are doing at one level of consciousness, and they don't go through a hell or a lingering or all of the other things that people claim they go through, that they simply pick up the pieces and move on in whatever process is available to them, just as any other life force does. The law of cause and effect may be operating, and they may have to complete that level at another point in time. But to state that they have to go through some sort of punishment, I think, is rather archaic. That's, yes, a tendency. I think it's a valid statement that that may be a portion, because the psyche itself goes through, you've got to remember that it's not some unknown force that creates this area, it is the psyche itself, in the process of reaction to, or guilt. And as long as we have such strong sanctions against suicide, which we have in our society, anybody growing up in our culture will undergo initially a very tough time following the suicide. Not because it's intrinsically a process, but because we have been conditioned as a moralistic value system. Then the soul finally breaks from that and has an opportunity to grow out of that particular conditioning response. My feeling is that it is not intrinsically valid, it is a conditioned state, and therefore we propagate it through our proselytizing of that particular aspect. My feeling is that if we ever brought through and released the sanctions on death, and that we did not have the strong moral attitude, that we wouldn't find the reports of people crossing over to confirm this, we would find that it would confirm a relative freedom, a state of consciousness that is relatively clear. And the only way we're going to find this out is not to seek it through the Western culture, but to find a culture that does not have the same moral values about suicide, and then trace the soul. To have somebody that's clear enough that can trace the soul's crossing and find out in a culture that does not have our attitudes towards death. I believe
that this is that the mountain letters are written by our ancestors.
Right, but the Mahatma letter contains within it some highly moralistic states of consciousness. It is also an exclusivity state of consciousness that I find sometimes intolerable. I'm only bringing through my opinion. I find that there is almost a hierarchical development, and anybody that's involved in the knowing and the inner circles are accepted, and when one isn't involved in the inner circles, they're rejected, which to me is an antithesis of unification and universal thought and the universalization of mankind. I find it rather hierarchical. And I find it also a tendency to propagate through very strong thought forms, because they are not at the level of ignorance. They are at the level of using very strong or very powerful levels of consciousness to create thought forms that not only influence this particular reality structure, but many other reality structures beyond it. It is not, though, therefore, to be taken as evidential, but only evidential relative to a state of consciousness or a perspective. Because it may be the preponderant experience, still does not give it validity in my consciousness as the essential experience, but can only tend to really validate itself. It tends to be a self-validating system. And that is highly dangerous in exploration of greater dimensions of consciousness. For you enter into an illusionary state, and there it will always mirror back constantly its own validity. My feeling is one must have the courage to attack the sacred cow and at the same time hold a state of consciousness of not being just a rebel, but being of a state of consciousness to see if there is any other option one may entertain in order to catch the flaw. Otherwise we can't see the inherent intrinsic error that we've made in our discernment. Just as you make an intrinsic judgment in your consciousness that there are incarnational cycles. There is a vast portion of my consciousness that agrees with you, but there is a portion of my consciousness that says, wait a second, there are other options to entertain in reincarnation, that we don't have to conceive of it linearly, that is there are other possibilities. What I'm trying to say here is the propagation of suicide out of a moralistic trend in consciousness, even though it's maybe 2,000 years old, which is relatively insignificant to the development of mankind and the levels of consciousness to which we are referring. And is this too foreshortened? And can we reach a level to not condemn, but to see once again that when one is involved with one aspect, it leads to an oscillation into another? So it's too foreshortened or too short-sighted to state that to condemn a suicide. It may be that suicidal processes may equally be a whole nidus on which a whole realization takes place. Without the suicide, the realization cannot take place. In other words, I disagree with the attitude that one must not. My attitude is, what is the durational result of this, not what is the immediate result of it. Just like we do know that they come into the light space upon death. But then to follow the sequence of events may be very different. That first realization, intoxication of release of the body, is not what is sustained for a very long period of time following death. Then there is a process, another level of development that ensues that is not all light and harmony and love. That there is another level that requires a whole different experience of which we don't even talk about. So I'm simply saying, in my particular, I think that we need to hold it as a likely process, but not exclude the fact that it is a conditioned reaction, and that the soul, because it believes and has and carries the collective guilt about suicide, that the poor soul that's trapped into that belief system has to undergo a certain level of experience experience because of the collective guilt that it entered into in the society that into which it was born.
First, we're coming here into different schools of thought.
Yes, but I'm looking very clearly at the attitude of a moralistic tendency, which I think creates the experience on the other side momentarily, and then it dissolves into a more natural development, versus, and which creates a tremendous amount of pain. The teacher, to me, must somehow entertain that there are, must see the potential options rather than but a single aspect. You do this all the time in your work. I've seen it time and time again where you have presented many factors and options in a particular process, just as you gave three facets that you were looking at in the process of death in the earlier portion of this tape. To refocus this, is it not possible that the belief system and the value system of the collective in which that individual is born is influencing the experience of that individual, and therefore may not be the intrinsic experience of death, but merely a thought form level of death at a certain point in time? And if that is a possibility, one must then release the absolutism that all suicide leads to a certain response. I don't think that's true. In fact, I know of one suicide not too long ago, which was tremendously relieving for the soul. And it was relieving because of a misunderstanding on one level of consciousness. Now, whether or not continued on, it leads to an effectual level to where the soul must experience something else, I don't know. All I know is that the soul didn't experience desolation on the other side. The soul experienced incredible elation getting out of the situation that it was in. That's still too short to state as an example of, because there may be a developmental sequence that carries it into more of the reactionary state. I don't know.
Well,
it's a matter also of being, of giving power to an authority versus going in and through your process of the illumined mind, dissecting out where the error in the perception, the minute you qualify a statement based on an authority and not based on your direct experience, then you run the risk of being in error. Because this is how science has been in error for many hundreds, if not thousands, of years, when an idea gets promulgated by a thinker. And I can give you an example of Galen, who for 1400 years dominated medicine with the most erroneous ideas that you can possibly imagine. And it wasn't for 1400 years before he was challenged. I'm simply stating that it is not to challenge for challenge's sake, but one must be circumspect in this area, that I believe it may create more of a problem by propagating rather than assessing the potentials and at least offering to a listener that there may be an alternative to that which is presented. If the alternative is presented, at least the mind is not trapped into a blind acceptance, but one can move towards much more of the experiential. If you leave no other possibility for a suicide other than this devastating state which they report over and over again, I feel that we literally consign humanity to that experience. I feel we may change that through an attitudinal shift, and it requires a shift in the judgment of one's withdrawal of the life force. In fact, if you were to work in the deepest of Buddhistic senses, there can be no judgment about a person who has killed oneself, nor can you have the judgment against the murderer, because it is not seen from that perspective. It is not seen as an intrinsic evil. It is seen as merely an illusion, a process, an experience. Now, where does morality then come in? Well, that's an even deeper question. What function does morality serve us? Does it inhibit us, or does it really allow us to be our full spectrum? Is it a whip, or is it some sort of a guideline?
It might be both.
Or is it both? And can it be taken to extremes? My feeling is that there were certain aspects in your discernments and in your reflections that I know from knowing you are based on your experience directly. And when you're speaking from your direct experience, there's no flaw in your, there's no potential for criticism, because it is direct experience, and one can only appreciate direct experience. The minute you set up a premise, and the premise that you're setting up is from your authority sources, then there is room for a potential error. And this must be at least expounded in saying this may be erroneous, so that the student doesn't get trapped at the level of thousands of years of promulgation. The Mahatma letters, this isn't to throw them out. It's just like not to throw out the Kabbalah or the Bible or anything else. It is to somehow discern where is the moral judgment coming in, and where is the intrinsic reality. In other words, blind faith is a disaster at this point in your experience. It would have to be a living impression. What is your living impression of this, not blind faith, about? I don't know how else to unravel the distortion that may be present. Now, obviously it may be true, but there's something inside of me that says it's not. That it is a method whereby it was used over and over again to justify somebody staying within a very tough circumstance. And there's nothing in my mind that says that somebody can't cut out. They may have to do it again, that's true. But I don't have a moral judgment about somebody ceasing their life. In fact, I see it all the time, only they don't call it that. I see somebody who is involved with smoking themselves to death. They're really doing it, and nobody really says anything to them about it. There are certain things that you were involved with that were really in the process of withdrawing your life force. And I don't judge that. It's not to be judged. It's to be understood. The judgment, I think, leads to the error. The question is to present as many factors as possible in the, and since you're touching upon a very deep issue, and part of your whole capstone has to do, I feel anyway, with the revelations surrounding death, both this side and what comes to you intuitively, still it won't be valid if you continue to draw upon just the historical aspect without bringing in the potential of other options too. There is a tendency in your work to give a great deal of validation. And just as Bailey had stated, and I don't know whether Blavatsky stated it or not, but the Tibetan did. The Tibetan said, this is scaffolding. This is only temporary until mankind has an ability to understand more deeply. And if the experience does not hold up, then please don't propagate it. And this is stated in that very beginning paragraph of every one of Bailey's works. Blavatsky, I don't know whether she states it or not, but it is stated, it is scaffolding. It is temporary structure on which to experience life. I feel that this and some other moralistic states are states that will be clearly overthrown within the next 20 years in consciousness, because they will no longer be held valid. Mankind as a whole will sense things quite differently than, and I don't think it will be thrown into amoral states of consciousness. I think there is that risk of an amorality. But there is something deeper. It's like the permanence that you were sensing and talking about here versus the temporary state. And to me, a temporary state is the judgment about suicide. There is a deeper sense to feel into that allows a much greater spectrum of experience and understanding. Because to me, there is a subtle to coarse judgment against the suicide. And the suicide is then the poor psyche undergoing that, having to contend with the thought forms of a collective consciousness that is set against suicide, is a tough road to haul. And I would say that there is no master in the plane, previous or now, either latent and veiled or conscious, that has not gone through suicide and grown from it. Therefore, I object to the negative aspect of the derogatory comments of suicide.
Well, let me show you the difference you might say of school.
But you yourself have the experience of going through suicide in your...
I know, and I took that up. I wanted to kind of... quotation from the Tibetan chakra, made karma.
And then, but do you see that even the karmic relationship then led to an even greater story, which is the Christ phenomenon?
Well, whether it's greater or not, that again is a question of valuation.
But as far as the collective consciousness is concerned, certainly the stories that were told through both and the influence of both, it isn't yet complete. It's as if we've seen one aspect, a counter-reaction, and then there must be an integration. This is the laws of three, or the Trinity.
You know, the force of your argument is to encourage a suicidal tendency in me.
Yes, to challenge you, very frankly, because to me, there's no sense at this level of our interrelationship to be operating on superficial levels. We're either dealing with essence and core areas, or there's no sense for us to interact. I'm in relationship to you as a person who, first of all, senses the incredible background that you have, and your integrity. I'm uncompromising in my own developmental sequence from the standpoint of being unafraid to confront any area of my own psyche, and therefore I'm not afraid to sit with somebody and talk to them about difficult areas. If there is a fear inside of you of the tendency toward suicide, then let's have it out and look at it and let it emerge and not make it into something that really will lead to it. But let's just see what the source of it is. Therefore, it then gets revalued and put back. It's sort of like a pet that you can finally put back and let go of, because it's no longer lurking in the darkness to get you. That only comes with the wisdom of being able to let it out and saying, come on out, I'm sick and tired of worrying about you. What is it that you want, and what are your forces, and so on and so forth. And then a wiser action takes place, something... Suddenly, I don't know how it works, I wouldn't even pretend to know how it works, but something then can transpire that releases the force behind that drive. Then you have really resolved the aspect. Now, as long as you carry the guilt of suicide in your consciousness, you set yourself up once again for an eventual suicide. It is immutable, that law of oscillation and periodicity. As long as you carry the thought of reaction to, you must experience the reaction. I mean, that's just basic in levels that you and I explore. I don't care whether you do it in this lifetime or you experience it in some other portion of consciousness. But when you finally are willing to allow it up and say, you are of no value, you have no, there is no emotive force in me. Being, instead of being something that you have to deal with over and over again. My feeling is that you will never resolve suicide if you contain a guilt or a reaction to the idea. If you can reach the balance point where it is of no matter whether suicide takes place or not, that isn't the question. You're in a deeper movement, a deeper aspect or a deeper understanding, and suicide is secondary or tertiary to some deeper aspect or experience. Then, I think, you're going to find that it's no big deal. It's not important one way or another. I recognize the heresy, and I recognize the dangers, and the dangers are that an undeveloped psyche will go into some sort of oscillation, either what is termed amorality, or it will act out the thing that it's frightened about. My feeling is that you have to confront it at some point in time. It will cost you enormous energy to defend against it by counterposing it constantly. If you take your illumined area of consciousness and lighten it by seeing it with understanding and compassion, I don't think you will act out the process of suicide. It will simply be one of many options of which you then surrender to what this lifetime really is geared for and how it is to conclude in its natural process. If you don't confront the option and allow it to come up and pull the energy out of it, it lurks and becomes your foe. It becomes a counterforce that increases in intensity, not decreases in intensity. This is how we create the very things you set yourself up for, is counter-reaction. I really feel that the clear light space that we discussed 3 years ago and 4 years ago, of your finally identifying with that, is identifying with the fulcrum point that no longer holds these value systems as far as right or wrong. But it does require that you do transcend some of the basic areas to which have been the foundational stones of a developmental sequence in you, in the approach to your current experience. At the same time, over and over again, it is written in the Oriental literature and rarely in the Western literature that one must go beyond the teacher. In other words, you must let go of the teacher. Your teacher happens to be some very powerfully authoritative volumes and tomes that were written in the past few hundred years, and some of them go back to several thousand years as far as the translation. There's something about the dropping of the teacher and having to move into the direct inspiration, which you had in 1936, you left behind everything. You went beyond the teacher. It is of no, it doesn't benefit you to go back to them. It's no longer justifiable. Something within you must let go of the thought forms and the belief systems and tap continually what you tapped into in your enlightenment, which was direct inspiration, which transcended anything you had ever written or anything you had ever read. Thank you. Wherever this came from. that sounds frightening to a certain level of consciousness, and yet another level of consciousness, I know the way you weigh things, and you're as much as somebody coming along and saying, and particularly a man of 40, coming along and saying, please challenge the Mahatma letters, and please challenge the secret doctrine, and please don't just take anything at face value, but you must feel into, and your outer mind, your rational mind is going to say, but I haven't got any other way of pinning down anything because these are the sources. And I'm saying that's one level of consciousness. You have the direct experience of going beyond all source in 1936. That is still available to you, and it is something that you must consider as a potential to transcend and to evolve the literature that has come through. Otherwise, what happens is, as I've said to people, I don't want a state of consciousness that was appropriate 2,500 years ago or 3,000 years ago or whatever. We are evolving in these states, and what was appropriate at that time is not appropriate for this in the context of the area in which we're living and exploring in the manifest plane. Now, when you're talking about the highest plane, you know, the highest plane, that's something else. But while we're here manifested, while we're struggling with the nitty-gritty of this plane, somehow or another we have to bring in the awareness of understanding the inclusivity of it, of beginning to go to the deeper value systems that look beyond the simple reactionary. Your statement in this tape, or the tape last night about the atomic bomb and the threat of annihilation, from one perspective is, and only from the personal attached level of consciousness, could that possibly evoke a response. Because from another level of consciousness, the one that is not attached to the physical form, it is totally unconcerned of whether or not we go off in an annihilation of the atomic bomb. It doesn't mean anything to it. It's immortal. It has its existences elsewhere. And if we happen to go up in an A-bomb attack, that's just part of an experience. This is very frightening to the portion in consciousness that has very set ideas of what is right and what is wrong, which is also the place where we suffer. We suffer. Just as I'm bringing forth the strong arguments here, I recognize that I'm bringing forth a potential within you, not only of the potential of justifying the process of suicide, but I'm also bringing forth the potential of pain because I'm asking you to let go of, or to consider momentarily anyway, options that have hitherto for been unavailable to you because of your deep immersion into using it as a foundation stone on which you lift your consciousness, and you have brought through things which transcend it. There is a point at which you must let go, though, or challenge the very basic premise on which these other states were brought through. And at that point, I feel, you will find that your basic premises that came through in inspired states will be further justified. Not the ones that have to do with the value system, but the ones where you literally touched levels, such as your understanding of the state beyond nirvana and so on. All of these states that have come to you, which are not written.
There is a part on nirvana in the literature.
Yes, but it came to you before you came across the literature.
That is true enough.
And you use the literature then as a validation. Now, if you use the literature as a validation, then it's terribly exciting. But if you use the literature as the stepping stone on which you are to arrive at a conclusion, we're into quicksand. Two vastly different states of consciousness. One, the potential of continuing to compound. The other one, the potential of being totally wrong, but somehow there is a process ongoing here of it reminds me of the that it one has to do all the work and then one has to relax. Well, maybe we need the structure long enough and then the non-structure must be given an opportunity to come through. Then we pick up the structure and then the non-structure. Somehow we use both at a certain development, a certain level of development. If you are afraid of, I mean, is it rational to conceive that if you are afraid of suicide and if you have a moral attitude or a judgment against it, is it not reasonable to assume that you create the very process of suicide within your consciousness? Do you not feed that area through denial? Is not denial a process of feeding the very thing that you are attempting to come to terms with? Now, if that premise is false, then I can shut up and we can go on. But I don't think the premise is false. I feel just as we are in the process of understanding, we're creating our own holocaust here on the plane by trying to conceive of something that is harmonious and heavenly and pearly gate-ish, which is what vast majority of Christians are involved with, as a defense against the negative force, instead of the much richer attitude of the Oriental, which has to do with, of course, the process of seeing the interrelationship, the dance between the two. I don't know how else we could deal with your dream if we can't see that what appears to be a negative force is ultimately brought through when seen from its totality. And if you were to then immediately have an impression of from the beginning to the end, you will see it in perfect harmony, every aspect brought forth in exquisite harmony. And one will no longer judge whether or not you committed suicide in one lifetime, had to bring through another component which led to another component in another lifetime. Now, a non-judgmental state would look at that and say, I can't believe it. This led to this, and the two together are unbelievably staggering in the beauty of it. A judgmental portion says, if you do this, the consequences is this. And yet both Shankara and Christ represent profound experiences in the collective consciousness, unassailable and undeniable. And it involved suicide, it involved death, it involved betrayal, it involved misjudgments, it involved the identification and errors. There are pieces within the metaphysical literature that discuss the development of the soul is oscillation from positive to negative in lifetime after lifetime in the periodicity until the soul gets ready for adeptship, at which time the central pillar is then seen. The pathway that blends the two. But the master, even before adeptship, and I'm qualifying it here, senses the and does not deny the historical events that lead to mastery. And the historical events that lead to mastery are not a single monotonous exploration of a single polarity. The thing that leads to adeptship and mastery is the exploration of the totality of existence on both sides, and I don't care how frightening it is on either side. A master is not a master until it acknowledges both sides in the historical background of the consciousness. If one is going to move into the collective consciousness of the human being, one must be able to see the quote-unquote negative side of it, or one denies and cuts off and partitions vast amounts of information and experience that are rich in the total tapestry that we call humanity and the experience. Therefore, any denial process to me is disaster. It leads to the eventuation of that which is denied. This is intrinsic in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, because the Tibetan Book of the Dead actually teaches the aspect of see it but no import. See it but no import. Because the minute you say, I defend against you, you've given it power to be. You have created the duality. The minute you do not see it as separate from self, it has no power over you. As soon as you see that the suicidal level of consciousness is not separate from you, but really identify with it at a deeper level, it has no power anymore. It simply is a potential, as is any other particular pathway that you may be striking. Now, I trust the deeper work that we're exploring, which is one that is not, first of all, I know you not to be, if you need a justification for withdrawing your life, it's not going to be because I come in and start talking. You would have done that a long time ago. You're too cagey. I've watched you work with too many people. You will listen to one, and then you'll go off and find another one, and then you draw your own thing. So even if you were to withdraw your life force, I wouldn't be foolish enough to think that it was I who created that within you. I would know darn well that you had consulted many people before you decided on it. So, which is part of the reason why I have the admiration that I have, is because I know that there's a balance, there's a ballast in your consciousness that can feel into and can explore and so on. I also know that there is a judgmental level in your consciousness that has a tendency and a preference for a certain alignment. This concerns me because it does not allow you full freedom of all possible abilities being presented to your consciousness. And as you know, in mathematics or any other logical deductive area of consciousness, it is when we don't have the full information that we start getting into trouble, and if our assumptions are incorrect because we have not had all the data, then we make grievous mistakes. And the only mistake I ever made in medicine was when I didn't take in all the data, the potential possibilities, and then I made a mortal error. Okay. So therefore I have the sting of the mistake of not taking in all data and getting lost in one area of consciousness and not holding my consciousness available to other potentials. I may have a penchant for a certain idea, but that doesn't preclude my looking at other aspects. And my attempt at this point in my life is to see other aspects with as equal an interest as the one I favor. That seems paradoxical, but there is that level that can then begin. And when I do that, I see even more than I ever did when I got lost in a psychological set. My feeling is there is a tendency in you to be psychologically set into the theosophical approach. At the same time, you have available to you the whole spectrum of human consciousness, of which the theosophical approach is one very rich aspect, but not the totality. There's something inside of you that knows this. And I don't feel this is heresy. I feel it is a simple statement. It's not meant to attack. It's simply meant to open for as much option and as much clarity as possible. And if it weren't stated in most of the theosophical literature that it was scaffolding and that mankind will evolve beyond this level of comprehension, that it's only useful and functional now, I probably wouldn't be as courageous in my statement of saying it is scaffolding and let's get on with creating.
Of course, again, that is a theory.
Mm-hmm.
You have a statement, I think in the Mountain of Brothers, that among the brothers there are no two opinions on the same subject.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it sound like kind of mathematical assurance. I will hear about the rest of it.
All right. the only thing that creates your pain is a sense of separation. The only thing that prevented your illumination in 1936 was a sense of separation. The minute you remove the block in your consciousness of separation, it no longer is painful. There is nothing to be separated from, Dr. Wolf. Therefore, I don't care if you want to pick up the old pattern, which is finding an external object, then it will always be pain and suffering because one senses it at a certain level as separation. The vaster sense is that there is no separation. Now, simultaneously, we're both aspects. There is the portion that separates and a portion that does not separate. Somehow, though, the healing process takes place in the resolution of those two factors. They're integrated. Without it, you act out again, externalize a process that is actually an intra-psychic process. I think you've already worked that with two women, and as I said in our beginning discussion, it is a matter of growth for you. If it were not a matter of growth, it wouldn't matter one way or another. It's just a different experience. It's very difficult to give up a successful modality. I know, because I gave up a successful practice of medicine. It's easy to give up something that one isn't too successful at, but to give up something that works every time is very hard. It's a seducer. You become attached to it. But one is diminished by hanging on to a successful pattern. One doesn't have the breadth. One is rather narrow. I don't know how one can look at mastery from a narrowed perspective. It must be one that has a broad, that has as infinite of a foundation as we rest on, not a selected foundation.
Yeah, it was a very successful relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No doubt about that.
So was the one with Sharifa.
Well, that was difficult in one way. I mean, marry a woman 7.5 years older than we were. Of course, I had an intellectual edge, but that's part of the story. The relationships towards life, social and so forth, of course, developed in the person that is older, particularly if she is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to be more advanced in that.
Mm-hmm.
Put you under a pressure to grow,
yes,
that is rather severe.
Yes.
In fact, I've heard that most of those marriages fail.
Yes. Yes, particularly because one of the reasons why they fail is because it's usually not in the area that yours was. It's usually acting out the Oedipal complex, and one has married a mother rather than a mate.
Yeah, of course, we married for work. I mean, for the work.
It was a working relationship,
yeah.
And there were things that you were put through to grow. But just as we gave the prayer at the table, that's obviously not your prayer. It's Sharifa's, because it has a feminine quality to it. It has a heart level that the illumined mind doesn't give. She also had abilities that were way beyond yours from the standpoint of her channeling and various other things. She heightened you. She prepared you for your illumination. Then you, that's the reason why it was a successful working relationship. Regardless of whether she was of equal intellectual capacity isn't the question. The question was, the relationship was very balanced given the forces and factors under which you were operating at that point in time. Then things moved to the next developmental sequence, which allowed Gertrude's participation. And now the process is one, and Gertrude not having the gift of clairvoyancy and the gift of channeling, had a very simple approach, which was placed you and gave you even more freedom because there was less pressure. You were totally in charge in the relationship with Gertrude, whereas you weren't totally in charge with the relationship with Sharifa. Sharifa made you work. You made yourself work in Gertrude's relationship. In other words, you then matured and took on the work pattern, which was quite different than the relationship with Sharifa. But each developmental sequence, incredibly important. The point being that both were successful in their own right. The question is not to go back and repeat. The question is, what is the next growth step for you? What brings you to a greater development? Not what holds you stabilized, not what retrogresses you, but what is your potential? How else can one meet a moment-by-moment existence in this plane if one closes down each moment as the potential for the next developmental sequence? If one is into treading water and waiting for the close of life, that, in one sense, is relatively tragic. If one is waiting for the close of life and can't wait for it, that's relatively tragic. Because each moment contains the next developmental sequence if one can open to it, theoretically. Meanwhile, we have these unbelievable forces to have to contend with, called the emotions, or called the attachments, or called the belief systems, or called ideas about. Still, I don't know how best to successfully live life than to give each moment the potential of a developmental step.
Does each moment stand in relation to the past and the future?